Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Give your walls the most advanced protection with Pittsburgh's Paramount Interior Paint and Primer in one. It's scuff, scrub, and wear resistant, while also blocking stains and delivering true one coat coverage. Choose from thousands of color options and refresh your space for spring. View our entire selection of paint and accessories today on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to find great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Give your walls the most advanced protection with Pittsburgh's Paramount Interior Paint and Primer in one. It's scuff, scrub, and wear resistant, while also blocking stains and delivering true one coat coverage. Choose from thousands of color options and refresh your space for spring. View our entire selection of paint and accessories today on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to find great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
David Anderson has strong opinions about the television series Ancient Aliens. So strong, in fact, that his Twitter name is David #CancelAncientAliensAnderson. You see, he's an archaeologist, and he takes real issue with how the show portrays his chosen field. In this extra episode of Wild Thing, he explains his reasoning and shares some of the history of the Ancient Aliens themes, many of which, no surprise, have their roots in science fiction. And he understands why these ideas are so appealing to people, because when he first started out, they appealed to him, too.
The real trigger point, though, that I've talked with people about over the last several years is that when I was 18 and going off to college, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And I picked up a book in my local bookshop called Fingerprints of the Gods by a man named Graham Hancock. And the short story is it's all about this lost civilization from about 12,000 years ago that the mainstream archaeologists sort of are too stuck up or too hidebound or narrow-minded to recognize is really there and exists. And I lapped that up. I thought it was absolutely amazing. And so I instantly started taking archaeology classes, and I loved them. But at the same time, this narrative that he had woven about this hidebound, narrow-minded academia, I was there. I'm like, I'm going to overthrow that crap. I'm going to show them how wrong they are and how there's all these really interesting things. And as I started to study archaeology, none of the stuff he had written proved true. And so like this whole facade of hidebound academy and quote unquote evidence for a lost civilization just all crumbled as I started to learn more about this discipline.
So you actually came in from your other side of your other area of expertise, the pseudo-archaeology side of things.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's something that brought me what I would call pseudo-archaeology today is something that brought me into this. And so I understand and I know how alluring it can be and how tempting it can be and how much sense it can make when you haven't dug deep and gone through all the records that are out there.
And Kate, and so for the those of us who don't know, what is pseudo-archaeology?
So pseudo-archaeology to me is an attempt to draw alternative explanations for human behavior in the ancient world. And it claims to make use of archaeological methods and archaeological materials, but it does so in problematic ways. The most common thing that pseudo-archaeology will do will cherry pick. They'll pick one, two, three, or four examples that if you take them out of context and look at them through a sort of a funhouse mirror might seem strange. But if you actually put them back into context with all of the data that they were found with, they're perfectly normal and understandable and explainable. And so pseudo-archaeology does this a lot, where they take things wildly out of context. They take a few small examples wildly out of context and use that to construct a narrative that, sometimes they walked in already having and already wanting to prove. And sometimes it's just fun. And so I think that, some of the folks run with it because they think it sounds like a more enjoyable or fun explanation.
Yeah. And would it be fair to say that one of the biggest proponents of pseudo-archaeology is your favorite show, Ancient Aliens?
Ancient Aliens is one of the premier examples of pseudo-archaeological explanations, but really, like, archaeology in TV in general has got a whole bunch of problems. So there's about, I'd say about a 75% chance if you're seeing a show on TV about archaeology, chances are it is pseudo-archaeology rather than the real stuff. If they're telling you, stay tuned for the next mystery, if they're telling you, like, you know, you'll never realize what we found next, and then when they come back, they didn't actually find anything. If they're constantly telling you, next season we'll find the truth, we'll find the real answers, and they come back next season and they still haven't found it, and they still haven't found it, and they still haven't found it, it's because it's all a setup, and they're just trying to lead you on to keep you watching.
Yeah, in some ways, I feel like a lot of shows about science are that way, because science is very deliberate and very procedural and takes years to come up with answers. And then you have to test those answers over and over and over and over and over again before you can be like, well, maybe this is right. We're going to move forward with this idea. And that's not exciting television.
Well, it can be. And I think this is something that we have to try to push back against, this notion that somehow people have come to assume science is boring. Like, science is pretty amazing and has helped us advance our knowledge of the world, the universe, and everything going on around us. It's given us this tech that we're using to have conversations like this. Archaeology, I think what I say to a lot of people, if you look at an ancient ruin, a pyramid or a monument or these Inca walls, and you look at it and say, like, oh my God, that's so crazy, I can't imagine how anyone could do that, it must be aliens. Think how much more amazing it's going to be when archaeologists can walk you through and say, no, it's humans, and we've got the data, and we can show you how. Day by day in an excavation, you get, a couple more potsherds, a couple more stone tools. It's slow to the buildup, but the conclusions are incredible and are not boring in the least.
All right, so Ancient Aliens, what's the premise of the show? Which kind of draws on what you just said.
Yeah, the basic premise of Ancient Aliens, where they started, because they've drifted a lot since then, but the basic premise is rooted in the books of Eric von Däniken. His first book was called Chariots of the Gods. And the basic premise of this show is the idea that the archaeological record is allegedly full of evidence, artistic depictions, fantastic technologies, or large blocks that no one could apparently move, and that the only possible explanation is that all of these are signs that our ancestors had encounters with aliens, and that we can't, the show assumes that archaeologists can't explain any other way how these things could be.
These are some big leaps of logic. But it seems like the concerns over the way they present information kind of run the gamut from being irresponsible in explaining how science works. What are some of the other concerns you have with this kind of programming?
There are many concerns, as you said. I think, as I said already, cherry picking is one of the big problems here. They take a couple of examples, and the examples I come back to a lot, and Giorgio Tsoukalos, the guy with the hair who's in all of the memes, recently repeated on Twitter, was this notion that the sarcophagus lid of Pakal, a ruler of the Maya city of Palenque, obviously depicts a man flying a rocket ship. It's this classic example where it's a complex piece of nuanced art from a culture that most Americans aren't super familiar with. You might have seen a few pieces of Maya art, but unless you're someone like me, you haven't spent tons of time with this stuff. And they take that example, they take that piece of art, and they pull it out of context and ask you to look at it and say, well, clearly this is a rocket ship, right? You know what? Yeah, if you squint at it and look at it and you've never looked at a piece of Maya art before, sure, it kind of looks like there's some elements that you can point to that are rocket ship-ish. But if you actually compare it to other pieces of Maya art, the themes and that are in that piece are repeated over and over again in multiple other pieces of Maya art. And they're often elsewhere associated with hieroglyphic inscriptions, and where we can actually start to prize apart and understand what those different themes mean. And art historian Linda Sheely was the first one to suggest that the sarcophagus lid of Pakal depicts him falling into the underworld, departing this world and passing into the next. And when you consider that it's a sarcophagus lid that was found on top of his mortal remains, that's a pretty logical interpretation to come from. But talking about episode one, that you watched, my favorite part, and I think it is so key to the dishonesty in the way the narrative is presented sometimes. In the episode one of Ancient Aliens, they interview a sculptor. And that sculptor says over and over again, there's no way people could have cut these angles or cut these interior corners. It had to have been aliens because people couldn't have done this with the technology they had back at that time. At the very end of his interview, and they left it in the show, at the very end of his interview, he says, well, I mean, they could, but it would have taken a lot of time. It's like, yeah, they can. It just takes a lot of time. Somehow, you know, Americans are perfectly comfortable with it taking multiple generations to build a European cathedral. But, you know, we can only imagine the people of Tiwanaku building rocks in a temple overnight. And so they must have had lasers to do it instead. Like, there's a lot to human ingenuity that they just aren't giving us.
Yeah. And I guess, why would you want to give credit to the aliens? Why not be proud of what humans have accomplished?
Well, and here's where the dark underbelly comes in, because the story that is repeated on Ancient Aliens over and over again is that people couldn't have done this. It must have been aliens. That story is a very old story that's been around for about 200 years. And it's a story that European colonialists told themselves over and over again when they left Europe and they encountered ruins in the Americas, in Africa, in Asia. And every time they found a complex ancient ruin that was abandoned, again and again, European explorers would, in essence, invent stories about how those ruins must have been built by a lost white race. And because they couldn't imagine that the indigenous people of those places would have been capable of building such a space or such a building. And Ancient Aliens, they repeat that same story, and a lot of times they use the exact same examples. They've just swapped out this mysterious lost white race for the alien greys or reptilian overlords that everyone else wants to talk about.
What's interesting is the show does seem to pose some truly legitimate and interesting questions. How did they cut the stone with such precision? How did they move these super heavy blocks with, you know, but the answer that they give is it's got to be God or aliens. I mean, I think I heard that like three times in the first episode. Why? What's the appeal of aliens doing this?
It's the aliens ex machina, right? Like if just let this alien swoop in and make a simple answer. I think, you know, there's a long history to modern American TV audiences enjoying and reveling in conspiratorial answers. I mean, I know this for myself. When I was 18, as I said, and I first read a book about what I would call pseudo-archaeology today, that idea that the mainstream archaeologists were covering things up was exciting and enticing to me. And I'm like, yeah, I can overthrow that. You know, I can go in there and show them that they're wrong. And that's enticing. And I certainly get a lot of those responses in social media when I speak out about these things, where people, you know, talk about like, well, the archaeologists are just jealous, or, you know, the archaeologists have to guard this secret information and maintain the paradigm so they can keep their jobs. Like, it's the most bizarre thing, because there's not a lot of money in archaeology. There's really, really not. This is not big oil or...
What about all the gold you guys are finding?
I have never found gold. And even if I did, the local laws usually dictate, you know, where it goes. It doesn't go into the pockets. Yes, 150 years ago, it went into the pockets of some archaeologists, but it certainly does not today. And if I found anything, most of my field work has been done in Mexico, and I've done some work in Egypt recently. Local laws in these countries mandate that anything found belongs to the federal governments in these situations. You know, there is no, and university jobs, like, good gosh, the way you get a job in academia is by making a name for yourself and getting some name recognition. Nobody got name recognition upholding the status quo and refusing to challenge the old guard. All new archaeologists do is try to overthrow the old school thinking of old archaeologists. Every 10 years, we are revolutionizing how we think about certain things and pushing out old ideas and bringing in new ideas. But there is this persuasive power to this, you know, conspiratorial narrative that the experts are just trying to maintain their privileged position, and they're shutting out all of these answers. And I think that is... quite simply put, it is seductive. And so people enjoy hearing those kind of answers.
Yeah. Do you have any sense of how widespread this idea that aliens are the bringers of technology, or how popular it is?
Yes. So this is something, you know, people say to me a lot, like, well, no one really believes it. Yes, they do. You know, it's something that for years, whenever I gave a public talk, people would ask me questions about, and I'd speak with other archaeologists, and they all had similar experiences. Everywhere we went, people would ask us about ancient aliens. But still, there was this urge to dismiss it. And then Chapman University started to do a survey. Well, actually, it predates the Chapman University survey, but it's a group of sociologists. Christopher Bader is the lead author on this project, have been doing a survey about paranormal beliefs. And they have been asking, do you believe in ancient alien contact? And in 2018, the last time they asked that question on their survey, 41% of Americans said they agree or strongly agree that ancient alien contact was real. And that number has been going up. So that's not an anomaly. Ever since they've been asking that question, it's been inching up a few points every year. And I think it was in 2015, I'm pretty sure, it was down in the 20%. And now it's all the way up to 41%. So we have seen a huge growth in that number over the last few years. And they've got a 2020 survey, they've told me, that should be coming out in the fall of 2020, where we'll get a new number on that and we'll see where it's going.
That's a lot of people. I'm curious, when you say ancient aliens, do they specifically mean the show, or are they referring to something broader than that?
In their survey questions, they ask if you believe if aliens visited Earth in our ancient past.
Okay.
And in 2018, that was at 41%.
Okay. So I've talked to some SETI scientists, and one of the things that I've heard sort of repeatedly as a theme is that, you know, aliens, should we find intelligent extraterrestrial life, that they will either provide us an example or they will show
up. I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
That's how to address big threats like climate change or other large-scale threats. And I'm wondering if you see some parallels there between what you're talking about with the pseudo-archaeology and the aliens as the guidance counselors of humanity in the past versus, like, in the future.
There are very old roots to where the ancient alien theme comes from. And so, you know, for most people, Eric von Däniken's book, Chariots of the Gods, in 1968 is viewed as the breakout moment. And it certainly serves as the inspiration for the modern TV show. And for von Däniken, he talked about aliens coming here and actually creating humankind. He is allegorical about this in his first book, but he implies that space aliens came and mated with Earth women. And there, out of that came Homo sapiens. He kind of pulls back from that as people reacted poorly to it, and sort of generally suggests sometimes more that no, it's genetic engineering or something like that. And so we'll see, you know, various ways where the ancient alien theorists will claim that aliens came here and helped create Homo sapiens. Other times they will come and say that they were our guide, that they taught us the arts of civilization, if you will, how to build architecture and buildings and writing and mathematics and these sort of things. But it seems like that has become a more minor background to a lot of it. I mean, it's less common, I feel like, for the ancient alien theorists nowadays to spend a lot of time talking about why they came and instead to just sort of indulge in the conspiracies of the alleged evidence.
You talk about how these themes from ancient aliens are not that new, and we have seen this for a while. You know, Chariots of the Gods is a good example, but there are other places where this theme continually crops up.
Yes. Yeah, so quite literally, von Däniken was taken to court for plagiarism when his book came out in 68. Now, they settled out of court, and so that could be, I've certainly known people who have settled out of court that weren't guilty, but they, you know, felt they were in a position that that was their only option. So we don't know per se why he settled out of court, but we do know that subsequent editions of Chariots of the Gods had a few new references and footnotes in it to some of these earlier works, like Powell and Berger's book, Morning of the Magicians, which was a book that had very similar themes. It claimed it was a more wide-ranging book, but Morning of the Magicians talked a lot about silver spaceships coming to the Earth and helping teach our ancestors the arts of the civilization, and that evidence of these ancestors were encoded in different ancient art and architecture. And where Powell and Berger got their ideas is something that is a little more fantastical. We know that Powell and Berger belonged to a group that, in essence, argued, and they, in fact, they published a magazine in Paris for a number of years called Planète, that argued that the writings of H.P. Lovecraft, the pulp fiction horror stories of H.P. Lovecraft, were, in fact, truth disguised as fiction. And so they spent a lot of what sort of shows up in Morning the Magicians is extrapolations from Lovecraft's pulp fiction as if it were real. And it gets weirder and more nebulous after that, because Lovecraft actually copied a lot of his stuff from some earlier groups, most particularly the Theosophical Society, which was an early 19th century esoteric organization. One of their lead authors and lead thinkers, Helena Blavatsky, is probably the first person we can sort of tie an ancient alien concept to, where Blavatsky argued or claimed in her book, The Secret Doctrine, that humanity was led out of Atlantis and Lemuria by spirits from beyond this world, and that these spirits took the form of humanity's earliest rulers in ancient Egypt and among the Maya and these sort of things. And it comes full circle, because Blavatsky claimed to get this information from something she called the Book of Zion, which she said was an ancient Tibetan text. We haven't found any physical copies of this, and so there's sort of no other confirmation that this book exists, but she says that she got it from the Book of Zion. If you jump all the way up to Erich von Däniken, in his third book, he started to say that where he had gotten some of his information was the Book of Zion. And you can trace the Book of Zion all the way from Blavatsky. Lovecraft mentions it. Powell and Berger mention it. Then von Däniken brings it up in his books. This book that no one's ever had their physical hands on, and yet somehow allegedly talks about spirits from on this grave, shows up in, you know, spiritual books, shows up in fictional sources, and then comes back into the ancient aliens crowd.
Yeah, it almost seems like a game of telephone in some ways, where you have these themes that show up in the early 1800s and then sort of make their way through literature, mostly in fiction. It sort of seems like, you know, these ideas of aliens and lost cities and futuristic technology, and then somehow start slipping into the realm of nonfiction and get seen as fact. How does that crossover happen? How do they end up making that sort of jump?
Well, especially if we're talking about pseudo-archaeology and ancient aliens and whatnot, the jump into fiction starts at least in the 19th century. The oldest example I have come across is Garrett Serviss's book, Edison's Conquest of Mars, which came out in 1898. And Serviss is pretty funny, because he basically plagiarized H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, and sold enough copies that he made some money for himself. And so his plagiarized copy of the War of the Worlds did so well that he was able to write a sequel. And so he wrote Edison's Conquest of Mars, where the humans went to Mars to take the fight to the Martians. And in that book, the human astronauts who travel to Mars encounter a group of humans on Mars. And those humans tell them that their ancestors had been taken from Earth thousands of years before, and that they had the Martians had come to Earth thousands of years before, and that the Martians had built the Egyptian pyramids and the Sphinx. And this is like the oldest time I've ever found someone saying literally space aliens built the Egyptian pyramids. And it just spirals from there, where it actually becomes a pretty common trope in the pulp fiction era. It's not just Lovecraft who incorporates some of these things. We have many different sci-fi stories that talk about aliens, talk about UFOs, talk about space alien abductions, and talk about aliens building and being associated with monuments and civilizing humans shows up repeatedly in pulp fiction stories in the 30s and the 40s. And then it transfers over into the comic books so that you get numerous examples of the same things showing up in comic books in the 50s and the 60s, all so that, you know, basically by the time you get to the early 1960s, there are a series of ancient alien tropes that have already developed in these fictional genres. That one that, you know, anytime our ancestors encountered aliens, they would immediately assume they were gods. That shows up repeatedly in comic books and pulp fiction. And that they would also assume that their technology was magic, because their technology would be so advanced that it would be beyond our human comprehension, so they would assume it was magic. Both of those things are sort of absolute tropes in the science fiction literature years before von Däniken publishes his book claiming that it's all actually real. And the reality is by the time von Däniken publishes this in 1968, it's old news. It's just he's able to popularize it and commercialize it in a way that no one ever had before.
And he puts it forth as fact, as true.
He puts it forth as fact and true, although I always like to remind people about the interview that he gave in 1973 to Timothy Ferris, and it's published in Playboy magazine, where at the end of the interview, the journalist asks him, "Do you really believe this stuff?" And von Däniken's answer is, he says, we have this word in German, Yeim, yes and no. And he tells him that in some ways this is just a joke and in some ways he's serious. But of course, he doesn't tell us which are the jokes and which are serious.
Huh, that's funny.
I would also say he's not given a lot of interviews to critical journalists ever since.
Oh, whoops. Is there any way you could see that the show, that Ancient Aliens as a show could be fixed or made into something that's more representative? I guess you would just have to scrap it. I mean, that's why your handle is Cancel Ancient Aliens.
It is beyond repair. I mean, I think that it has maligned indigenous knowledge. It has maligned scientific research for 10 years now. It's in its 14th season. And, you know, a lot of people tell me, and this is where I'm sympathetic. You know, a lot of people have told me that they watched Ancient Aliens and for the first time learned about different archaeological sites around the world. And they knew maybe the alien stuff was pushing it or a little bit out of reach, but they were excited because they learned something about the ancient world nonetheless. And you know what? I went through that process, not with Ancient Aliens, but with this other pseudo-archaeology book. But I don't think that's enough. I think, you know, we could actually make an exciting TV show about the amazing ways that people did these things and introduce people to the ancient world. I think that there is too much poison in this well, because fundamentally at its roots, this is a show that repeatedly questions whether indigenous people of the Americas and Africa and Asia, and suggests that they couldn't have built any of these things on their own. They must have had alien help. They rarely go to Europe. They do have an occasional Stonehenge episode. They have an occasional episode about, you know, other things coming from Europe, but they don't question European achievement very often. Whereas like every episode questions whether Africans or Native Americans or Asians could have built things on their own. The well here is deeply poisoned and it is deeply prejudiced against non-European people. But a lot of people assume, or especially on social media, will make jokes about people who believe in ancient aliens as being stupid. That is not true. And I never thought that once before. And I do sort of poke at and make fun of ancient alien concepts sometimes. But the people who believe this stuff are passionate, are curious, and they are swindled. They're taken advantage of because, you know what? Most of us don't know everything about everything. We know a little bit about this, a little bit about that. And of course, if you don't spend your life studying archaeology and the archaeological record, of course you don't know that much about it. And when someone comes along and presents you a cherry-picked, manipulated view of that record, you don't have the tools in your pocket to challenge that. And where ancient aliens and other conspiracies thrive is by, first and foremost, knocking down the experts and saying, don't trust those experts. You can't go listen to them. You can only listen to me. And that's where the problem comes, is if you stop listening to the experts and only listen to these alternative voices, all of a sudden you don't know what's wrong with these alternative voices.
Yeah. All right. So let's leave ancient aliens and maybe Earth behind. And while you question ancient aliens and the whole premise of that and that whole idea, you're not against the idea that there very well may be aliens out there.
You have to be very specific in this question, in my experience, in terms of when we're at what question are we actually asking about aliens? Could aliens exist somewhere in the universe, in the galaxy? Absolutely. The galaxy is huge. The universe is even bigger than that. I am in no way, shape, or form saying that there's no way alien life could exist out there. And the reality is that we don't know that much about our galaxy and our universe yet in terms of what's on other planets. I think it's this. I mean, this is me as I'm an archaeologist. I am not a professional biologist or astrophysicist or anything like this. But I would think it's highly unlikely that there's not life out there somewhere. Intelligent life? I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, we have a very small sample size. We as humans have been to Earth, the moon. We've sent some robots to Mars and we sent some robots to Venus. We've got life on Earth. It's looking better on Mars. We don't have the linchpin yet on Mars, but it's seeming more and more likely that there might be microbial life or something like this on Mars. If that turns out to be true, then wham. The real truth is we have no idea how common life, let alone intelligent life, is in the universe. Could it exist? Absolutely. The claims made in Ancient Aliens are really bad, and they have nothing to do with that. They are misrepresentations of the archaeological record.
So your feeling then is keep looking out there, but maybe spend a little less time assuming that aliens did the work down here?
Yeah, I would absolutely be thrilled to learn about alien life. And I absolutely, you know, love SETI and love these other investigations that are continuing to look for something up there.
And to be clear, alien life, microbial or intelligent, either would get your excitement up.
It'd be amazing. It would be absolutely amazing. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that gets misunderstood about archaeology versus pseudo-archaeology. Like, if I could prove that ancient aliens were real, or if I could prove that Atlantis was real or something like this, I totally would. These things would be cool. And I don't, you know, I'm not knocking them because I'm trying to uphold the paradigm of the established mainstream. I'm knocking them because there's no evidence to support these claims.
That was David Anderson, an archaeologist who specializes in Mesoamerica and pseudo-archaeology. He is not a fan of ancient aliens, and for more on why, you can follow him on Twitter, at DSA Archaeology. You can follow us, too, at Wild Thing Pod. And for more about Wild Thing, check out our website, wildthingpodcast.com. This podcast is a production of Foxtopus, Inc. Our executive producer is Scott Carney. Editing is by Alicia Lipinski, and the score and sound mixing come from Louis Weeks. I'm your host and creator, Laura Krantz.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.